morning, everyone. Can we thank the worship team this morning for that? So, in lieu of a video to open up each teaching, what we're doing is a little bit different. If you weren't with us last week, what we're doing is we're just inviting someone from our community up front to share a little bit about their lives and their work and how they see God in their work and how we can be praying for them. And each week we're focusing on a different area, a different career area. And so I'd like to now invite up Sarah Cool, wherever she's at. Would you welcome Sarah up here with me right now? Well, this is Sarah. Sarah, could you just briefly describe for all of us, share a little bit about your life and what is it that you do and how it is that you got into that profession and everything?
Great. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Like Ryan said, my name is Sarah. And outside of the home right now, I am a licensed mental health counselor, but didn't always begin that way. So for the first like 10-ish years, I was in Christian college ministry. And so as I was working with college students, I was experiencing firsthand a lot of the trends and statistics that many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with, that young people are generally experiencing more mental and emotional health issues than beforehand. And I was really experiencing that as I'm trying to help these individuals grow more to be like God, but also just, grow as humans. And so I was really feeling in my role like, hey, I don't know all the ins and outs of this and how I can help these individuals as they're really struggling with something that, I just didn't have a lot of experience or training in. And so when my husband and I were returning from overseas, it just felt like a natural transition for me to go and get my master's and continue to work not only with young adults, but I see kind of a wide array of individuals as well. And so that's kind of how I got here.
That's really cool. So in addition to your role as wife and the work that you do as a mother, this is something else that you do.
Yeah.
So you have a lot on your plate.
Yeah, I do.
On your plate. And so how do you see your work as ministry? In what ways has your faith, you've obviously had a season in full-time, vocational ministry, but how do you see this work as a ministry, and how does your faith influence the role right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Two thoughts kind of come to my mind. One is kind of off of what you shared last week, Ryan, which was this, just that the work that matters is kind of help bringing understanding and order out of chaos. And a lot of times when my clients come in, especially at first, their inner worlds feel pretty chaotic. They lack understanding, or they're confused or feel stuck and don't really know how to move forward. And so I really see my role as just kind of journeying with them to kind of help unpack their experiences, what's going on in their lives in order to bring further freedom and healing for them. So that's kind of one part of how I see like my work as a ministry. I think the second has to do with just the heaviness often that comes with counseling and being a therapist. A lot of my clients open up to me about things maybe they've never shared with anyone, or some of their greatest pains or their deepest hurts. And I think in those moments, I really see my role as like embodying the presence of Jesus, to be there, to listen, to empathize, to show compassion and love. And whether or not they know Jesus personally or not, I really see that I get to be the hands and feet of him in people's lives at really key and crucial moments. So that's a little bit of how, those things intersect for me.
Yeah, cool. So you're with individuals who are meeting you at, like you said, the most chaotic points in their lives, or the heaviest seasons of their lives, or they're addressing those chaotic, heavy seasons for the first time. Maybe they're not right in the middle of it, but maybe they haven't. So you're bearing a lot of weight. You're carrying a lot. So what challenges do you face in particular, maybe more broadly speaking, your particular role, other people who carry that, and how can we as a church be supporting you and praying for you?
Thanks for asking that. There are a few challenges that come to my mind, but I think specifically, kind of like you were sharing, Ryan, there's just a heaviness right now. I feel it. I imagine you feel it at times, and certainly the people that come to my office feel it. And so I think probably the challenge that I face the most is just being able to show up day in and day out for these individuals, and really be there in the moment with them, but also to be able to go home and care for my family and care for myself. And so, just trying like boundaries, work-life balance, rest. I think some of those things can be the greatest challenge for me and people in this field.
So where do the caretakers find care?
Yeah.
Where do they find restoration? Where do they find their spot to get refilled in order to go back around.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, listen, one of the ways we've been ending this is we've been inviting those who serve or work in a similar capacity to this. So if you are involved in any kind of healing or care or mental health work, whether that's a healthcare worker, a counselor, mental health professional, social worker, first responder, caregiver, chaplain, researcher, therapist, or anyone in those spaces or adjacent spaces, would you please stand right now? Don't be shy. Would you please stand? First of all, don't sit yet. Can we thank these individuals for working? Stay standing. If you can remain standing, please remain standing. Because we would like to pray for you. And if you are a loved one nearby, if you'd like to hold their hand or place your hand upon them, you can do that. If you're a stranger, keep your hands to yourself. But let's pray for them. God of mercy and healing, we lift up before you today these servants who stand among us, those who are called to care for the bodies, minds, and spirits of others. God, we thank you for the skills that you've placed in their hands, the compassion you've planted in their hearts, and the strength you give them day by day, often in places of pain, pressure, and quiet sacrifice. Lord, you know the burdens they carry. Long shifts, the emotional weight, the decisions made in uncertainty, the stories that they have to take home and hold silently. Would you renew their energy, restore their joy, and remind them that their work matters deeply. And so where there is burnout, bring refreshment. Where there is heartbreak, bring comfort. Where there is discouragement, bring hope. And may they sense your presence in every patient room, therapy session, emergency call, every quiet moment of care. Would they know that they do not serve alone, but they walk with you? And God, I pray, would this be a church, a community that sees them, supports them, and prays faithfully for them? I pray this in your powerful name, Jesus. Amen. Amen. Can we thank Sarah again? All right, so good morning, everyone. It is so good to see all of you here. If you're new or visiting with us today, I'm one of the pastors on staff here at Arbor. My name is Ryan, and we are right in the middle of a new series that we're calling Work That Matters. And last week, we kicked this thing off by going all the way back to the beginning of the scriptures, to Genesis 1 and 2, to unearth and bring out this idea that in the beginning, work was good. It was. In the beginning, work was good. It wasn't this necessary evil. It wasn't something invented to make our lives miserable. In the beginning, work was good. It was holy. It was meaningful. It was purposeful. And last week, maybe for some of us, a small percentage of us, we walked away from hearing that teaching with this sense of like, oh, I am now invited to reimagine my daily tasks. This is so exciting. This is so life-giving. I cannot wait for Monday morning. But you know where this is going. Many of us, we heard that teaching and we understood it, but we didn't buy into it. Many of us probably heard that and woke up the next morning and did not experience that reality at all. Maybe we rolled out of bed into a Zoom call that could have been an email. Maybe we found ourselves for the 1,000th time rage sorting laundry. Maybe we just like were sitting at a desk or table and we were just looking at our to-do list for the week and we thought, like, really? This is the thing that's supposed to be sacred? Ryan is out of his mind. Listen, if that's your experience, I get it. I do want to say that if that's what you felt this past week, what you felt is real, it is valid, it is true, because what we explored last week is absolutely true. There's also this very real tension that we live in right now. We live in this tension, in between this tension between the goodness of God's original design for work and what we actually experience on a day-to-day basis. And so today, what we're going to do is we're going to be honest about that tension. We're going to name that tension, and we're going to trace it all the way back to the beginning, to the story about that garden that we talked about last week, where everything changed. But we're not going to do it just to sit and be like, yeah, this is what it really is, and this is terrible, and we're going to just commiserate about how terrible work is. No, we're going to look at the story again, and we're going to continue to try to reimagine and relearn what it looks like to live and work well in the midst of that tension. Does that sound good? Okay, the head nods are saying we're okay to go, okay? That's good. I think I can tell from last week you're still apprehensive. You're like, is this really? Okay, no, here we're going to do this. If you've got a Bible or a phone or just good memory, go ahead and turn to Genesis 3. And if you don't have any of those things, don't worry. It's going to be on the screen. Last week, we ended our time with Adam and Eve in the garden. And they were placed there to cultivate it and to build it and to care. Remember those Hebrew words, to shamar and kabash and radah. And there's this beautiful picture painted of what work could be. They were placed there to cause that space to thrive and flourish and grow. And what we saw last week is that Eden wasn't this finished product, but it was this beautiful beginning. Eden wasn't designed and created to be this perfect lounge for them to chill out. It was meant to be a launch pad for us to move forward into good and beautiful work, a place filled with raw, untapped potential, just waiting to be shaped into something even more beautiful. But Genesis 3 changes all that. Genesis 3, something happens there that fractures the original calling. And Tim Keller explains this in a way. Last week, I read most of this quote, but I left off a very important part at the end. Do you want the full quote today? Want the full picture? Here we go. Here's the full quote. You might remember this from last week. Work is rearranging the raw materials of God's creation in such a way that it helps the world in general and people in particular thrive and flourish. Yes. But then M-dash. But sin has disordered that calling. And some of you are like, you left that off last week? That's like the most important part. Trust me, it was killing me too, but we had to live in that tension to truly experience that tension. We really did. And so here's what this means practically for us. Work is still good. Work is still good. But there is a disturbance in the force, so to speak. That's the one time and one time only we're doing that, folks, all right? That's it, that's it, all right. Enough, back to the important stuff. Listen, that disturbance or that disorder that Keller mentions, it's found right here in Genesis 3. And so many of us familiar with this story, we know how it goes. Adam and Eve, they're in this garden, and then they are tempted. They're tempted by something more than just a shiny piece of fruit. It's meant to more broadly represent this draw to a knowledge and a power outside of this loving, trusting dependence on God. And they're not just tempted by this idea. They are drawn into it, and then they give into it. And the consequences that they experience are not merely individualistic for them. The consequences that are experienced by this movement, by this moment, they reverberate throughout creation. It sends fractures in every dimension of life, including the world of work. And Genesis 3:7 puts it this way. God speaking, he says this, "Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat food from it all the days of your life." And I want to just sit on that phrase, painful toil, because that phrase right there, that probably best describes how most of us experience the work we do day after day. Is it not? Painful toil. Painful toil, this phrase, painful toil, in the Hebrew is this word, itzabon. It's a bone, and it carries with it more than just this sense that, like, work is hard, like physically hard or mentally hard. This term, this phrase carries with it this sense of grief about our work, this sense of sorrow about the things that we put our hands to. like this deep ache in our body and in our soul, it's a bone or painful toil, is describing the kind of work where you get up in the morning and you pour yourself out into the work and it still doesn't work. That's what it's describing. And so I want us to hear this, a little caveat on one of last week's main ideas. You are still royal, and your work still matters, but now work hurts. You're like, I didn't need a Bible lesson to learn this. My experience told me this reality. But listen, you are still royal. Your work is still important, but now it hurts. I don't want us to get confused, though. What is not cursed in this moment is work. Work is not cursed in this moment. It's not part of what's broken. It's the world we work within that resists our efforts. It fights back against us. And this doesn't matter if you're a gardener out working against weeds or you're a graphic designer working with difficult clients. Regardless of where you work, something always seems to get in the way of good work. And Genesis 3:18 describes it like this. The ground will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. And the rabbis who originally taught this text, as they wrestled with it in ancient Israel, they expressed that this idea of thorns and thistles is meant to be understood as something far more than just literal weeds. It's meant to be understood by the readers then and us now as something far bigger, far broader, something more symbolic, a symbol of everything and anything in the world that makes good work difficult. So maybe it's your inbox. Maybe it's your broken team culture. Maybe it's your fatigue. Maybe it's your inability to accomplish your goals, whatever it might be. We experience this. Listen, if you've ever poured yourself into a project and no one noticed, if you've ever worked so hard that your back ached with pain or your mind was aching with frustration and fuzziness and fatigue, if you've ever stepped back and looked at your work and you're just like, what's the point? Why do I keep doing it? Why do I keep trying? Listen, that's not merely stress. That's not merely burnout. That's Genesis 3 in action in your life. And listen, you are an image bearer of God, and your work still matters. But our felt experience of that work is that it's hard. It hurts. It's painful. And not in just some sort of general, vague, existential way. There are very real ways that we can look at the work that we engage in week after week, and we can name, here's how it hurts. Like, we don't need an ancient Hebrew word study. We don't need talk about thorns and thistles being symbols to be able to specifically name how work hurts now. We've got our shared and individual experience of how work hurts, do we not? So let's talk about a few of those specific ways in which we find that work hurts month by month, year by year, in our lifetimes. How work hurts. Here are some ways that work hurts, that we experience this in real time. Our work can feel fruitless. Maybe you've experienced work like this. You pour in the hours. You stay late. You write the draft. You clean the house. You rework the spreadsheet. And somehow, at the end of all of that hard work, you've got nothing to show for it. Nothing to show for it. That really hit someone there. You're like, yes, I know it. I feel it. The draft gets scrapped, right? The house gets dirty. Like 30 minutes later, if you live with teenagers, it's just like, what happened in this kitchen? The spreadsheet's unusable somehow. And then here's the baseline experience. What we see is that we can work as hard as we want, but the output never seems to match the input, right? And so the work just feels fruitless. Not just that, but the work feels frustrating. It's frustrating, and maybe you step into your place of work, whether it's your home or your an office or somewhere in your community, and you step in and you've got this great vision of what could be. And then you just find yourself stuck in the same spot. And maybe the system's broken. Maybe the meetings seem to go in circles. Maybe the tool that you're using isn't quite working just right, or it breaks or falls apart. Your boss doesn't listen to you. And so what you end up finding is that a majority of your work time is spent on simply overcoming obstacles and getting back to baseline instead of working forward towards something that is thriving and flourishing. And so our work feels frustrating in that way. It feels like we're spinning our wheels, right? It feels like a Sisyphean task, just moving that rock up the hill only to go all the way down to the bottom. Here's another way. Work can feel fatiguing. And not just in the sense that you're like physically tired, although you guys are looking kind of fresh today. The 9 o'clock service was a little rough this morning. I could see the tiredness in their eyes. I felt it too, though, to be sympathetic. But listen, this fatiguing, this tired feeling, it's not just that like I feel tired once in a while when I work, because sometimes that feels good. It's this sense that this tired feels permanent. I wake up tired. I go to sleep tired. I drive to work tired. I look in the mirror and I say to myself, you look tired right now. And listen, this is something beyond. This is something deeper than just a physical sense of being tired. It's like a deep fatigue in our souls, almost leading to a sense of hopelessness or despair around the work that we've been called to put our hands to. Like, I just don't have it in me to do it one more day. And lastly, this work can feel unjust. Can feel unjust. Sometimes it's not just that the work feels broken, it's that the system around the work is the thing that truly feels broken. You're overworked, you're underpaid, you're overlooked. Or maybe you actually find yourself in a workplace or a community or in your home and you find yourself in a privileged position where you're like, no, actually it's pretty good, but what I do notice is as I see other people who are overworked and underpaid and overlooked, I see other people who just get caught up and rolled over, steamrolled by the machine, and it just seems so unjust. I feel like after we've gone through these four, if you were with us last week, you're like, okay, now you're actually naming my experience of work. This is how I feel work to be. This is how I encounter work. And again, I get this. This is reality as we experience it. This is truth. All of us have experienced some or all of these things in the work that we do. No one is immune to it. And this experience of how work hurts, again, is something beyond stress. It's something beyond burnout. This is Genesis 3 on the ground, in our inboxes, in our meetings, in our exhaustion. But here's the thing. We encounter work that hurts all the time. It permeates our lives. But when work hurts like this, we as a people try to manage that pain somehow. We try to deal with it. We try to solve it. We try to fix it. And we start looking for ways to make sense of it. If this is the world I live in, and this is how work hurts, how can I operate in this world in such a way where I can survive? And Tim Keller, in his book, Every Good Endeavor, and if you're looking to do a deep dive or a deeper dive on work and a good theology of work, I would highly recommend that book. He says, we as human beings tend to drift to one of two responses when we encounter this world of work that hurts. And he essentially says this, that we can either idolize our work or we can despise our work. We can idolize it or we can despise it. And for some of us, those of us who idolize work, we look for it to tell us who we are and what we're worth. These are wrong ways we view work. This first one, we idolize work. And we look to it to find out what we're worth. We attach our meaning to our productivity. We need our job to justify our existence, to give us our meaning. And the danger here is this, listen, that like once we set up work to be our savior, we also ask it to be our judge. And so when work's going well, when we're thriving, when we're successful,
when all the data is going up and to the right, man, life is good. We feel great about ourselves. But listen, the inverse is true as well. When things get hard, when the business isn't doing well, when the home seems like it's falling apart, we start to grow discouraged, distraught, we despair. If we idolize work, and that's where we get our value, then our value is always up for review. We idolize work, some of us. But some of us, we do the opposite. We despise work. We swing the complete opposite direction, Office Space style, right? And we despise work because it hurts. It's frustrating. It's fruitless. It's fatiguing. Why should I care? Why should I care? So we start to, listen, this is dangerous. We start to resent it. We start to resent our homes. We start to resent our coworkers, our boss, people in our community that we're working alongside. And we distance ourselves from it. And we treat the work like a curse that we have to endure until those fun spaces, until I get to go home and sit on my couch, until I get to the weekend. I live for the next vacation because that's where life really happens. Or we wait our whole lives until retirement. And so we detach from work. We disengage. We show up late. We leave early. We do just enough to get by. And listen, in doing that, we haven't just lost our motivation. We've lost our calling. We stop participating in work as partners with God. We abandon the task of cultivating and caring for what God has portioned in front of us, and we forfeit the joy of contribution. And in the process, we become something less than we were made to be. We stop bearing God's image in the world through the work of our hands. And the point is this, looking at both of these things, neither of these things will heal us. We encounter work that hurts. Some of us idolize it. Some of us despise it. Listen, the end result is still more pain. And essentially what these two things are trying to get at is that all of us believe essentially this lie that either work is our life or work gets in the way of our life. That's the root lie that we believe. The work becomes everything, or work is getting in the way of everything that really matters. But listen, Genesis gives us a bigger, better, more beautiful story. A better narrative than the one we've inherited from our culture. A different starting point, a different story. And so just hear this truth. You are not a machine built for meaningless motion. That's not the aim of your work. You are an image bearer made for meaningful movement. And so even in this world that is full of thorns and thistles that we're going to encounter every single day, even when work is hard, even when the system feels broken, even when the results feel thin, there is still a better way to live, a better way to work, a better way that is not attached to output. We don't have to idolize work. We don't have to despise it. There's another way, a more grounded way, a more hopeful way. And we'll get to that next week. I'm just kidding. We're going to jump in right now, okay? We're going to do this, all right? We're going to do this. Here's some hope. Here we go. What does that look like? What does it look like? Well, let's talk about, I just kind of highlighted four practices. Four simple postures, countermeasures to the ways in which work is hard that would help us work well in a broken world. None of these are cure-alls. These are things that we have to engage in as a practice, as a posture, day by day in all of our work, big or small. And so here's the first one, how to work well in a broken world. Work with presence. Work with presence. What does that mean? Well, I think we oftentimes think that in order to do good work, I need more time. I need more hours in the day to work well. But I think the true answer is we need to slow down and be more present with the time that we have. And I get that as this sits, many of us are like, you don't know my schedule. You don't know how busy I am. No, I get it. Like, my last 2 weeks have been insane. And so this is tough, but hear this. There's this French philosopher, Simone Weil. She once said this, that attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. Attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. She wrote this like 100 years ago. If she was alive today, she would be like, oh my gosh, what has happened to people's attention? But it really is. And again, this is a practice. This is a posture. We can't just all of a sudden flip the switch and be like, I've got attention. This is something where as we engage with daily tasks, we call ourselves back to the sense of what does God want from me in this moment? He wants me to slow down and be focused on this one thing in the moment because all we have is the present. Attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. One of the holiest things we can bring to our work. And so, just maybe this is what this looks like practically, that as we engage with that spreadsheet that no one really cares about, when we change that diaper that no one's ever going to see or remember, when we go to that meeting that we would rather skip, I believe that even in these seemingly trivial moments, when we bring presence to them, it can transform these mundane moments into actual meaningful acts of worship. Colossians 3:23 says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. And so when you show up fully, not rushed, not distracted, not already mentally on to the next thing, I just got to get this thing done in order to go to the thing I really care about. But by the time you get to the thing you really care about, you really don't care about it anymore. In everything, when we show up fully, we are truly loving God and others through the task that is right in front of us. Because the thing we have right in front of us is all we really have. Work with presence. Here's the next posture. Work with integrity. Work with integrity, not perfection, because this idea is not about performance. It is about what integrity is really about, which is wholeness. Wholeness, our whole selves. It's about doing work well, not for productivity, not for performance, not to impress people, but because of this. Listen, how you work shapes who you become. It does. How you do the work in front of you shapes who you are becoming, whether you're aware of it or not. The way you show up, the way you treat people, the corners you cut or don't cut, all of it, every action, every decision is forming and shaping you for better or for worse. Thomas Merton put it this way about doing work with integrity. He said, to do the work carefully and well, with love and respect for the nature of my task. And so whether it's vacuuming the living room or balancing the checkbook or organizing the sock drawer or giving the annual presentation, whatever it is, doing that work carefully and well with love and respect for the nature of my task is to unite myself to God well, God's will, in my work. To be united with God in your work does not mean your work has to be quote-unquote meaningful or massive or productive in the world's eyes. To unite yourself with God's will in your work simply means you honor the work at hand with dignity, with care, with craft. Integrity is not about performance. It is about alignment. Alignment with God's will in my work. And ultimately, this idea of working with integrity is about becoming someone whose inner life matches what's flowing through my outer life, through my mind, my hands, my whole body. Genesis 6 puts it like this. Whoever sows to please the Spirit, or think whoever works with integrity, from the Spirit will reap life, peace, flourishing, goodness. And so, we are encouraged here, don't grow weary in doing good, in working with integrity. For at the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. And what that does not mean is that if you work with integrity, your business will thrive. Your home will become peaceful and clean, perma-clean forever. You'll never have to vacuum again. It doesn't mean any of that. It means that you will reap a harvest in your soul, internally. And by God's grace, maybe some more on the outside, but at the very least, when you work with integrity as it transforms you, you will reap a harvest in becoming more like Christ. When you do good work, you're truly imaging God, and you will reap that harvest in your life. Not for your own benefit, but for the benefit of those around you. You'll become an agent of love, loving God and others more thoroughly, more generously. So I just love the end there. If we do not give up. So church, don't give up. Don't give up. Don't stop doing your work well. Even when it feels hard or fruitless, your quiet faithfulness matters. Even when no one sees it, even when no one thanks you for it, even when it fails. Because how you do your work has a profound impact on who you're becoming. Work with integrity. Work from restfulness. That's the third one. Not laziness, not detachment, restfulness. Because the temptation for some of us, especially those of us who idolize work, is to believe that if we're not producing, we're falling behind. If we stop the work, then everything might fall apart because I'm so important. If we start believing this, we start believing that we are only as valuable as our most recent output. But from the very beginning, you know, the creation story that we read last week, God rested. And he didn't rest because he was tired. He's God. He rested because it was woven into the fabric of creation. This is what good work looks like. It has a rhythm. It has a pattern. Rest reminds us, listen, that we're not in control. Rest reminds us that we are not machines. Rest reminds us that we are not God. And so when we rest, the biblical word for this is Sabbath. When we Sabbath, it says, the world will still turn if I don't answer this email tonight. It'll be waiting for you. It'll still be there. It'll still be there. And so, listen, sleep. Rest. Take a break. But listen, you're not taking a break to, quote, recharge your battery. Do you even see how the language we use in this modern world equates us to machines? It's awful. We rest in order to remind ourselves that it is God who controls the harvest. It is God who controls the outcomes. It is God who controls the results. So yes, do your work with all your heart. Work hard, but know when to stop. Know when to breathe, know when to turn off your phone, know when to close the laptop, know when to say no to someone. It's okay. And remember, I just think this is important, and someone here probably needs to hear this. You are loved, even when you're not productive. You are loved even when you're not productive. Work from restfulness. And finally, this last one, work for justice. Work for justice because your work that you do that's in front of you on your table isn't just about you. It's about the people your work touches, the people your work impacts, or perhaps the people that your work is not impacting, the people that your work is not touching. Justice asks, who is affected and who benefits from my work? But it also asks, who isn't benefiting from this? Who is my work overlooking? Or who is my work perhaps marginalizing? Micah 6:8 says this, what does the Lord require of you? It's a pretty clear question, isn't it? All right, what does God require of us? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. I love it when God's straightforward and clear, right? Isn't it so clear? This is what God desires from us. And this isn't some sort of public policy thing. This is a Monday morning kind of thing. This is an everyday life kind of thing. And justice can take many forms. For some of us who are bosses, maybe it means making sure there are fair wages, honest feedback, maybe it's sharing credit, speaking up for someone who's being mistreated in our workplace, in our lives, in our community, in our neighborhood, wherever it might be. And sometimes justice just means joining with the good work that's already happening around us. And so this week, at the end of every teaching, what we're doing is we're highlighting one of our ministry partners, and we're looking at the good work that they do. And who we're looking at today, we're going to spend some time with the Woodinville Storehouse Food Bank, one of our partners. It's a place that's doing good work every day to restore dignity to our neighbors, to provide food and care and presence. And they are doing good work right in our backyard, right down the street. Their executive director, Josie, she's here with us this morning. And she's going to be out in the lobby. She's going to be back by the Connect wall after the service. I know that she would love to meet with you, answer any questions you might have, perhaps share with you how you can partake and get involved in the good work they're doing there. But before we go any further, I just want us to check out this video and see some of the good work that they're doing right now.
Storehouse is a biblical term. There is a quote in the Old Testament about bring your full tithe into the storehouse. And the storehouse was used to feed the poor and the hungry. You think Woodinville, you know, this is a high-income area, but there are needy people here. Some of them are rather invisible, some of them are homeless.
All walks of life, homeless, single moms, people that are surprised to be here. When you see somebody every week, you really know who they are. We always say, come to the food bank last, let us be your last. Pay all your bills, keep coming to the food bank until you're all the way afloat, and then ditch us.
It's like I go to grocery shopping, you know, that I work, but it's not enough. It's very important. If we don't have this, how will we survive?
Are you doing okay?
I'm okay. It was embarrassing in the first, but now everybody's so nice that it's fun to come.
The volunteer and the client will go through together and they'll choose what they're permitted from each section. They form relationships, and that's important too.
Choice is what matters. People shouldn't be shopping for scraps here. You should have fresh. We have fresh everything.
We walk out with them, take their food out to their carts, and just say, how is it going this week? Is there any way I can pray for you? You know, what's happening in your family?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We get to know grandmas and grandpas and people in Mexico and, you know, find out that somebody had a stroke in Mexico or something, and we pray for them because that's on their heart. So
we're here because I need help. I got four kids. Struggling paying the rent and all this stuff, you know what I mean?
Just the one bad time in your life?
One bad time in my life. Never happens before to me.
It's something I look forward to every week. I know I have milk, and I know I have eggs and bread and butter and cheese.
And as COVID showed us, everybody's like one paycheck away from needing us, it seems like.
And they treat you with dignity here. They treat you with such dignity here. They make you feel like you're just having some bad luck, and they're here to help, and they're happy to help, and they want you to succeed. And do you think we want to be here? We don't.
We feel like it's part of caring for who they are. They are important, valuable people.
That's what working for justice can look like. Just simple, local, faithful, really good work. So in the end of the service, if you're interested, Josie will be out there. All the individuals in that video agreed to be on that video. It can be a sensitive thing in a space like that to create a video to share what's going on there. Everyone agreed to that. Just want you to know if you or a loved one are there, there are very strict policies regarding photos and videos of the clients of that service. There's a lot of care and intentionality there. They're doing some really good work. And so listen, as we head out into our weeks, into a world full of work that matters, but work that hurts, and work that can be painful, and work that can be frustrating and feel fruitless and fatiguing, would we go out different? Would we go out as individuals who work with presence? We show up fully, right where we are. We work with integrity. We would be transformed and becoming good through the good work that we're doing. Would we work from restfulness? Would we rest and Sabbath and pause throughout our weeks, knowing that it is God who controls the output and the harvest? And finally, would we work for justice? It's so easy to get wrapped up in our own jobs and think, man, my work is about my career, or even my work is about my family. Our work is about so much more than that. Lord, we work for justice, for the good of our neighbors. Those people in that video are our neighbors. They're our brothers and our sisters. Remember, you are not a machine built for meaningless motion. You are an image bearer made for meaningful movement. And so, would we go out and do work that embodies presence, integrity, peace, and justice? Would you stand with me as I pray? Oh God, we thank you. You've invited us into good, meaningful work, work that matters even when it feels hard or unseen. Would you help us to show up this week fully present, faithful, and rested, trusting you're with us in every task, big or small. Remind us that we are not machines, but we are people made in your image, here to love and serve well. Lead us in doing good work that brings life and hope to all of those around us. And we ask all of this in Jesus' name.